Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He's Ironhead. Jeff Byers, how are we doing this week, Jeff?
Pretty darn good. Enjoying life.
As I've been saying all week, this week it's a lot easier conversation than it was a week ago, Jeff, coming off a tough loss.
That is for sure. Getting the job done in that environment and doing it in the fashion they did definitely makes people feel a lot better. Not that they've completely forgotten what happened the week before, but certainly a little different overall feel now to the season as a whole.
Well, I think we saw it wasn't quite forgotten before the game when James Franklin introduced an image up on the scoreboard. A few fans, let it be known, they are still not over that loss to Ohio State, Jeff.
Yep, and that's all right. Yeah, I think, to me, again, the objective all season has been get to the playoffs. I think if you get there and you get that home game, which it is set up now for them to do that, then you probably need to win that game to feel good about it, as we talked about last week. But, you have plenty of opportunity here to truly erase what happened against Ohio State if and when you get there. But obviously first order of business is taking care of things here in these final three games and giving yourself the opportunity at redemption in the minds of, you know, at least a subsection of the fans.
There's some fans it'll never be right. All right, let's take a look. College football playoff rankings came out. This is after a weekend where Miami got beat, when Georgia got beat. Now, Miami, by the way, they've had so many close calls. They were overdue for this. Georgia, just a team I'm not sure I quite understand. Some weeks I think they're the very best team in the country. Other weeks, not quite. But with those two teams losing, Penn State works their way up to the number four seeding. Let me change that. The number four ranking, which if things were, if the playoffs were to start today, which they don't, but if they were, Jeff, that's a home playoff game for the Nittany Lions.
Yeah, and I think at the end of the day, again, everything that Penn State wants is in front of it. It's just a matter of taking care of business. I was very impressed with the way they took care of business against Washington, and hopefully if they can build on that and get the kids dialed in on the task at hand, and I'm talking about finishing off the runs the way – they did against Washington, finishing off drives the way they did against Washington, catching the balls, everything that's thrown at you if you're the receiving core. You know, again, it was certainly lesser competition. You take that into account. But I thought Penn State, you can only play who's in front of you. And I thought Penn State did a very good job of improving in the areas that it clearly has to improve in if it is going to be a title contender here at the end of the season.
A big point of contention, obviously, in the Ohio State game was that end of the game, last possession, first down on the 3 or 4 yard line, running it up the middle three straight times, no creativity at all. And we saw the complete opposite against Washington, where we did see Bo Prabula in there. We saw Tyler Warren in there. We saw them throw the ball before fourth down. We saw them run wide. We saw all these things against Washington. I guess the first question is, why didn't we see it against Ohio State?
That is a really good question. And I suspect Andy Kotelnicki and James Franklin are looking themselves in the mirror and wondering the exact same doggone thing. Because it doesn't guarantee. I mean, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that if they had done that, boy, absolutely, Penn State definitively wins that game over Ohio State. They get it in there, and then they go for two and make it, or they win it in overtime. We'll never know, but I guess that's kind of the point, is why leave some of your best options laying there. And again, I the two ways to look at it is yes, and I think that's what most folks are doing is, well, why in the world? You know what you have. You know what these guys are capable of. Why didn't you do it against Ohio State? I guess at the very least, I will say it seems like they learned their lesson from Ohio State and moving forward. Yeah, you know what? If we're inside there and we have a great option with the quarterback, Bo Prabula, and we have a great option at running. And again, I think there's some things you can do off of what we saw even against Washington with Prabula and Warren. You can set some things up for other options that those guys will have in big moments down the stretch or even in the playoffs. And I think that's also very beneficial.
And I think it is a case that they do get conservative against Ohio State. I think there's that feeling that, you know what, they have athletes as good as ours that maybe they're just too fast to do those other things. And he felt like we could pound the ball in. We're on the 3-yard line. We should be able to do this. But I think that's playing not to lose as opposed to playing to win.
Yeah. And I am one of those people. I just like options when you're down there near the goal line. And I've always loved the ruling out your quarterback and spreading out the field. And again, it doesn't guarantee anything. It's not that there's always going to be something there, but if you get a little play action and you roll the quarterback out, either way, you have the option then. And certainly with a Bo Prabula who has the running ability, he does. Now you have the option. Let him run it if he feels like it's there. Let him see if he can find somebody somewhere that is open. And again, hopefully, if you get the blocking up front, the worst case scenario is, all right, you throw the ball away and you go to the next down. I really like it. And kind of same thing, if you run the option play down there itself, just a running option. Again, you give yourself opportunities to me, and there's no guarantee of success. I like trying to put pressure on the defense, make them guess a little bit, let them have to cover more than just one element of your game. And if they're up to the task, again, you tip your cap and, man, job well done. But to me, you at least walk away saying, boy, we gave ourselves the best chance here. And again, over four plays, yeah, let Tyler Warren run it. Let Bo Prabula have a run pass option maybe a couple of times there. I just think then you can at least walk away saying, boy, we tried a lot of different things, gave a lot of different options, and the other team was up to the task. I think you walk away feeling better about that, even if you don't succeed, then, we tried the same thing three straight times and then had limited options even on the passing play on that fourth down against Ohio State. I do wish they had been more creative in that situation. But again, the good news is we saw that creativity return. We saw it successful. So hopefully if they get in those big, tight situations again, there's some confidence there and trust that, yeah, by gosh, let's give it a go anyway.
Well, my last note on that is I like the fact that you use the word option, because even in the play that they called, it looks like the quarterback has the option to pull it and run. It looked like he had that opportunity and it would have been effective, but it looked like there was no way in the world he was going to pull it.
Yep. I agreed completely.
All right. Just sticking with the Washington game and Ohio State game and doing comparison. Jeff, do you know what a catch is?
To be honest with you, not so much. Nope, I really don't. And I don't know that anybody that watches football on a regular basis, either at the collegiate level or in the NFL, feels real confident in given situations that, yeah, that definitely is a catch, or, yep, that definitely is not a catch. I still think there are a lot of situations where it's, I don't know. I don't know how they're going to call it, and I don't know what to think anymore.
Well, I think that's the problem, Jeff, is if I'm obviously talking about the back-to-back call, back-to-back games where there were the calls, is it a catch and fumble or is it an incompletion? And just a crazy, crazy, crazy coincidence, each week the call went differently and both times against Penn State. Now, I'm going to set aside the conspiracy theory. And as our colleague Chris Buchanani always says, don't mistake conspiracy for incompetence. And I have to agree with him. My issue is it's the same team, Penn State, in the same venue, Beaver Stadium, in the same conference, Big Ten, literally just days apart, what looks like almost an identical play called differently. And it's that inconsistency that bothers me.
Yeah, I may be in the minority here. I actually think they got both calls right.
You're really in the minority, Jeff. Forget it. I don't want to hear it.
I'm comfortable being in the minority, but I just don't think in that Ohio State game that he ever had possession. I think that ball was moving about the entire time. Whereas Saturday, I do think there was, you know, a clear football move, I guess is the terminology. But I mean, I think he had control of the ball, not for long, but I think he had control of it. And then it popped out of there. Listen, close calls. And I think you at least hope that stuff evens out over the course of the season. And maybe if you're an optimist anyway, you're like Penn State will get a couple of those calls when they need it. Come playoff time or something. But listen, this game, it moves so fast, and those plays are so close that if you do get calls against you, again, and what I thought was encouraging this Saturday is Penn State rolled on right after it. And I just think consistently, when you look at the teams that are truly contending, again, at any level of football, somewhere along the way, they're getting calls that just make you shake your head, and they're overcoming them because they just have the right mindset. And I do think Penn State had the right mindset here against Washington. It's like, okay, yep, that's, you know, at the very least, a tough call that goes against us. Back at it, let's take care of business and not let that thing snowball into something more than it should.
All right, that's it for quarter number one. Stick around, we got lots more to go. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers, traitor to the home team because he fails to see that the officials blew the call both times, Jeff. Now, actually, we were talking about the catch and fumble versus incompletion the last couple weeks. I kind of thought they were both, to be honest with you, catches and fumbles. I think that they often error towards incompletion too often. I think, you know, catch, step, just because it happens fast doesn't mean they didn't catch the ball. And I think oftentimes the timing of when the defender reaches the receiver is right after he catches the ball. So it happens fast. But I think, but again, it goes back to my first question. Do you know what a catch is? And I don't think anyone does, including the officials.
I do not disagree with, and I'm not even sure. it's one of those things, Jim. I mean, I think sometimes it makes it more complicated when you try to, like, that whole, all right, well, you have control. What does control mean? A football move. Well, what exactly is a football move? And I know they define this stuff as best they can. I really do think it is difficult. You know, there are certainly situations where I think the overwhelming majority of folks would look at and say, all right, that's a catch or that's not a catch. But I do think there's a lot of these situations where, again, it depends which side of the field you're on, and it's kind of the angle you have, what you think of as control, what you think of as a football move. Even if you try to make it as simple and defined as possible, I think there's still – it's just going to be a very tough thing to consistently get where in every situation you know definitively whether that is or isn't a catch.
Exactly. All right, let's move on. I talked a little bit about the playoff rankings, which came out. Penn State, number 4. And it's interesting, Jeff, there's been some backlash nationally. How in the world could Penn State be ranked number 4? How in the world could Georgia not be in the playoffs if they were to start now based on the rankings? And it kind of goes back to this discussion that we've had from even before the season started. How are you going to judge a team like Georgia who has played like 3 or 4 ranked teams, 1-2, lost 2, versus an Indiana team who's undefeated but has yet to play anyone over 500.
This is the thing that I think is most difficult to me, Jim, in trying to assess college football when it comes to rankings is, like, in the NFL, you have comparable schedules. Now, do some teams have easier roads than others? Of course. But they're very comparable schedules. You're playing in the ballpark of the caliber of teams throughout the range. You're playing some good teams, you're playing some mediocre teams, and you're playing some bad teams. And some years you'll get a little break and get a couple more of the easier teams, and some years a couple more of the more difficult. The multiple challenges in college football. So, you know, again, in the NFL also, you're playing 17 games, and there's only 31 teams in there. So you're going to get a pretty good sample size. The problem is with so many teams in FBS football, even if you're trying to schedule, make it a difficult schedule or at least schedule a marquee game. Like Texas, when it schedules Michigan, and Michigan scheduling Texas, that obviously you're scheduling that with the idea that, boy, this is going to be a big time win. That's going to be a resume builder if we get it. And if not, you know, our team at least learns from playing one of the other really good teams in college football. Well, Michigan is not one of the best teams in college football this season. They were last year, but it changes quickly. And even more quickly, I think the potential, at least with NIL and all of that. And so, you know, at the start of the season, you presume if you're in the Big Ten or the SEC, well, yeah, we're at least going to play 3-4 ranked teams because, my gosh, that has to play out one way or another. You're in a league like that. And this year, just with the way the schedules have played out, again, Penn State missing Oregon. Who knew that Penn State missing Indiana was going to be taking a marquee opportunity off of the schedule for Penn State. And that's the thing. It's so difficult. So how do you try to compare schedules where you have no common opponents? I think that is really, really hard to do.
How do you judge how well the playoff committee did?
I think so. My quarrel with them would just be pretty minor here and there. There are a few teams that I would have up a little higher, a few teams I would have a little lower. I think Indiana, because of the way it has rolled through its schedule, actually deserves to be in front of Penn State. But again, they're going to have we're going to find out. They'll play Ohio State and we'll have a comparative score and we'll see, you know, how everything shakes out, at least in that particular regard. I actually think I've been going through and just making my own rankings each week, and I'm very, very similar. There's a couple of teams here and there that I have a spot or two lower or a spot or two higher, but I think they're right in the range with all of these teams. And you can only look at the schedules that they have played and try to do as the best you can with as little information about how those teams would actually match up against one another as you can. And again, to me, they've done a pretty good job of at least getting the right teams in the mix here for this playoff race.
I'm actually with you. Now, our colleague Andy Shea was not happy with it at all, was really, what are they doing? What are they thinking here? And I challenged him to create his top 12, you know, the teams that would be in. And it was all very, very similar. His one thing is he dropped Indiana below there's the three Southeast Conference teams, Alabama, Ole Miss, and Georgia, that you've got to lump the three of them together because their resumes are so similar. Yeah. I think Georgia has the better wins, but they have losses to the other two. You know, how do you pick among them? But I also think the two teams that get talked about a lot are Indiana and Georgia. Indiana for being ranked as high as they are without playing anybody, and Georgia having played so many good teams. But there's only a handful of big games left, Jeff. It's surprising. With like 3 weeks of the season to go, I count only three relevant games. In the Big Ten, it's Indiana, Ohio State, where we are going to find out about Indiana. If they beat Ohio State, hey, they're where they belong. If they lose, play competitive, okay, they'll be a one-loss team that will still make the playoffs. And if they get crushed by Ohio State, the conversation will be quite different.
For sure. And again, I think I think this is setting up beautifully for them with the bye week before they play Ohio State. So I think they'll be as prepared as they possibly can. I think that game will tell us a lot about just where Indiana is. And I suspect with the way that offense is operating, that they will hold their own. I don't think Ohio State is going to go in and blow their doors off. I think that Indiana offense is legit. I think they do a great job of creating matchup problems, even against a team that matches up very well athletically with them in Ohio State. I am fascinated to watch that game. I will say that.
I'm with you. I think it will be interesting. Can Indiana hold up at the line of scrimmage? I think will be a big question. You know, will Ohio State just with the big guys, bigger, stronger, faster up front? But that will tell. Now, I mentioned Georgia. Georgia's involved in, and I think it's this weekend, it's Georgia and Tennessee. Tennessee ranked ahead of them. Georgia, where I think some people are panicking, oh, Georgia, one of the best teams in the country. As of today, they won't be in the playoffs. Well, guess what? If they beat Tennessee and, you know, finish out, they'll be in the playoffs.
Yeah. Yeah, I do think it's going to be one of the storylines that could develop here is if Georgia does win that game, you could have, and especially if like Texas gets upset somewhere here, either, Kentucky.
By Texas A&M. Well, go
ahead. If either of those teams take them out, you could very conceivably have an SEC where every team has at least two losses. Well, then how do you go about determining which of those two lost teams end up in versus out? I think that's going to be very interesting. And then also, again, we got to see how a lot of this stuff plays out. But like if Miami and SMU play a really tight game in the ACC championship, and let's say SMU, you know, in overtime wins it by a point, I'm really curious to see what the committee does. Are you putting a two-loss SEC team in definitively over a two-loss Miami team, which could have a Heisman Trophy winning quarterback on its roster as well. I think I know the answer, and I don't think Miami fans will be happy with it, but I don't think it's I don't think that's cut and dried. And especially, let's say, if there's a controversial call that goes SMU's way down the stretch, or there's a lot of things here that I'm just really interested to see how they play out here with the remainder of this season.
Well, here is Mike. I'm with you. I think there's one ACC team, one Big 12 team. I think that's the end of the discussion because of the strength of schedule. And Miami has not looked impressive in their wins. I think that will be part of the equation. As far as the Southeast Conference goes, I mentioned Georgia playing Tennessee. Tennessee is one of the few with just one loss. Let's face it, if Georgia loses third loss, they're out. But if they beat Tennessee, Tennessee will have two losses. Georgia will have two losses. The only one-loss conference teams are A&M and Texas, and they play each other. Yeah. So one of them will have two losses. So I think this is where you're going to end up with is one team in the SEC with one loss, and I think it's about six teams then that will have two losses. I'm going to ask you about that tiebreaker, Jeff, when we come back right after this break. So stay tuned.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and Cafe Tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello, welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim, he's Jeff. We're talking college football in the national picture, and we were talking about the Southeast Conference. Real quick, Jeff, here's how I think it goes. Georgia beats Tennessee, and let's say for sake of argument, Texas beats Texas A&M. Texas A&M would have three losses, so the overall playoff picture, they're eliminated. LSU, two-loss conference, three losses overall. Missouri, two losses, but their schedule is bad. I think they're a fraud. So you cross off like LSU, Missouri, Texas A&M, and Tennessee, Texas, Georgia, Alabama, and Ole Miss are the teams that you get four of them making the playoffs, because I think it'll be four Big Ten, four SEC, and four other guys.
I think probably that's the case. If Texas A&M beats Texas, though, now you have, and I'm talking about overall records now, two losses galore in the SEC. And let me throw another scenario at you. And again, I think you're probably right, but let's say BYU runs the table and they got very fortunate to beat Utah. I got home from the whiteout and actually watched the end of that game. And wow, I know Miami has pulled some games out by the skin of its teeth, and it finally seemed to catch up to them this last weekend. But it a couple of times, seemed like that game was over, and then brought back to life was BYU. Now, I don't think BYU is going to run the table here, even in the regular season. But just for the sake of argument, I think they'll go down at Arizona State here in a couple of weeks. But let's just say that they run the table. And I think they have Kansas this week, then Arizona State, and then Houston, which is also a dangerous team at the end of the year. But let's say they run the table there. And again, kind of same thing. I'm always throw in the kind of wild scenarios. But let's say they lose that Big 12 championship game to whoever the opponent ends up being. But let's say it's a controversial ending. Most of us think that call should have gone BYU's way, and it went the other way. And BYU loses by a point in overtime, and it's an outrage. does that one loss BYU team, you have to take the Big 12 champion, obviously. Does that one loss BYU team automatically, definitively, yep, it doesn't matter, fourth place in the SEC, two-loss team? And I think most people are going to say, well, yeah, because schedule. Well, hold on a second. Because if it is Alabama, like, actually look at Alabama's schedule this year. It is not an overwhelming schedule. And potentially, BYU could end up, and again, we got to see how this plays out, but BYU could have, you know, two or even three wins over ranked opponents. Now, I'm talking top 25 here, but ranked opponents at the end of the year. And that Alabama loss to Vanderbilt, I know Vanderbilt is better. I know they're having a good season by Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt's not like a playoff contender, folks. Like, that is a loss that is not a good loss, even with Vanderbilt playing better and being an overall good story in college football. But they're not like Indiana. Like, they're not taking the world by storm here. Again, do I think Alabama would get in over BYU in that scenario? I do. But do I think there's a legitimate argument that BYU could make, depending, again, on how some things play out? I do. And I think there's going to be some interesting scenarios potentially that could play out. And a lot of times over the years, this is the time of year where we play those hypothetical games. And then at the end of the year, it's like, yeah, all right, that's debatable whether one team should be in or not with the four-team playoff. Again, no matter where you draw the line, there's going to be debate. I just don't think – I am confident that we will have the deserving national champion in that 12-team field this season.
Well, the thing of it is, Jeff, for every time you say like a BYU maybe going into that championship game undefeated, losing a close, even a close controversial game, you then, okay, put BYU in, you've got to take somebody else out.
Yep.
So it's very easy. And I always feel like this when I hear a national pundit, and I've heard it, you know, BYU deserves to be in even if they lose that conference championship game because they made it there. The conference championship game shouldn't, you know, hurt them so much. But the fact is, they never then say, who are you going to take out to put them in? And that's going to be the challenge. And I think right now, with the Southeast Conference going to be a jumble of two-loss teams, I think it just comes down to you take four of them, and you know, you're not going to eliminate a Georgia or an Alabama to put BYU in.
Yeah, and again, I think you're right about that, and I think there is a legitimate argument to be made that, and what generally will be said is, okay, well, on a neutral field, I mean, come on, who are you taking, BYU or against Georgia or BYU against Alabama? And that's fine as far as it goes. My counter to that would be, okay, well, who on a neutral field are you taking, BYU or Vanderbilt? And who on a neutral field are you taking, Vanderbilt or Alabama? Well, guess what? I got news for you. Vanderbilt won the game. They beat Alabama. Like that actually happened. You know, Notre Dame, Northern Illinois. Who are you going to take? I'll take Notre Dame. Well, yeah, they played a game. Well, so I get it as far as it goes. It's just there's not a great argument to be made, again, because you don't have really comparable schedules, comparable results. You know, you might have some common opponents here or there, but even then, when did you play that team in the season? What was the injury status of that team? It is really hard, I think, to make those comparisons. And, you know, well, this team is more deserving. I don't even know what that means. What does deserving mean? Because you can make the argument. I think BYU would have a very valid case. And I think there's probably a fifth team in the SEC that would have a very valid case as well. And, you know, somebody's going to make the determination, or a group is going to make the determination. I don't know that there is a truly fair way to do this.
Well, there isn't, because you're comparing apples to oranges. But I do think there's also going to be a little bit of the eye test going on. BYU, Indiana, both undefeated teams. But you look at how BYU escaped versus how Indiana has just dominated their schedule. They're not squeaking by Nebraska. They're crushing Nebraska. So if you put one of those big teams, Alabama or Georgia, playing Indiana's schedule, it probably would have looked just like what Indiana has looked like. So I think that's also part of it. Before we get too far towards the end of this segment, I wanted to ask you, Jeff, this was a question that came in from one of our listeners, and I never gave this a thought, but I'm fascinated by it. And she asked, Penn State is now ranked fourth in the playoff rankings. If it were a 14 playoff, would they be in?
Boy, that is a great question. Depending, I'm going to fall back, like right at the moment, if you stop the season and we just go with the data that we have right now, boy, that's a great question.
Now, with understanding, if Indiana were to beat Ohio State, they would jump Penn State, but Ohio State would get a second loss and drop below them. So that's the one big game. You know, Georgia playing Tennessee, would a Tennessee win over Georgia bump them ahead of Penn State? Possibly. But let's say Georgia beats Tennessee, so they both have two losses. Here we are, Jeff.
Well, and even with so let's just take, so if Ohio State loses to Indiana, and let's say it's, 22-21, Indiana pulls it out. Do you automatically drop Ohio State below Penn State because they have the two losses when they won the head-to-head game at Penn State? And the only losses Ohio State would then have would both be to undefeated football teams, both in really close competitive games. I mean, you could make a pretty easy argument that Ohio State is the third best team in the country. They just happen to play the top two.
In the 10 years of the 14 playoff, how many two-loss teams have made the playoffs, Jeff?
But how many of those two-loss teams had both of their losses to undefeated teams at the end of the season? I think zero.
I think you're correct on that. And just like we found out in 2016, Penn State beat Ohio State head-to-head. Of course, Penn State had their, the second loss. But I think you could have thrown the two resumes out there and said, which way are you going to go? And it went Ohio State's way. I suspect it might be the case again, but it certainly is a fascinating question. And like I said, I'm going to go with Ohio State beating Indiana, to project going forward and say, how do you do it? I would find it hard to see them do three Big Ten teams, which is what it would be, Oregon, Ohio State, and Penn State. So maybe the loser, well, even if Oregon lost the conference championship game, there's still just one loss. So it's a fascinating question, though.
It is. And again, part of it would depend on how things finish up here and how Penn State looks, to be honest with you, in these final three games too. I mean, if Penn State keeps looking the way it did against Washington, yeah, I think there if it was a 14 playoff, there would be a very strong case to be made. If Penn State goes out and even if they win, let's say they win by just a couple of touchdowns at Purdue, get a last second field goal to beat Minnesota and win by a touchdown over Maryland. That finish gets you in over, teams like, Tennessee or even BYU. If BYU runs the table, then it'd be interesting.
It really would be. I thought it was a fascinating question. All right, Jeff, that's going to be it for I forgot what quarter is. That'll be it for quarter number three. When we come back, a couple things I want to ask you about. We have the big hot dog conversation. We were all going to get a free hot dog with Penn State versus Ohio State. I'm going to ask you about that when we come back.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Jeff Byers. It's quarter number four of our show. Jeff, we got the news this week. We missed out. We missed out on a free hot dog, and we're finding out Donald Trump, he was going to be at the Penn State-Ohio State game. 111,000 fans, and it turns out one of the reasons why he wasn't attending the game was he wasn't going to be allowed to buy everybody in the stadium a hot dog.
It's an outrage, Jim. A hot dog on every plate. Is that not what politicians have long promised? I mean, come on. And yes, what a missed opportunity for those of us at Beaver Stadium. It is, it's just a sad state of affairs.
You know what, Jeff? I had somebody ask me, like, would a free hot dog influence my vote? Hell yeah. And I said, if you want to get me a plate of buffalo wings, I'll stuff the ballot box for you. Not that difficult an equation.
Quite frankly, Jim, I would like to see dueling campaigns try to outserve the fandom at Beaver Stadium in the future. I think we should bring all candidates, not just presidential candidates, Senate candidates, congressional candidates, right on down the line, come in and see which is going to do a better job of providing a game time meal for the fans. Trump's buying you hot dogs. I'll buy you the chicken wings. Well, I'll buy you the cheesesteaks. This is the dream I have for our great country and our great stadium here in Happy Valley.
Jeff, I love the way you think. And you know,
I'm glad somebody does.
Well, we were going to have Donald Trump there for this event. We missed out, but he does show up for other events, right?
Well, he does. He actually is a big fan of Penn State wrestling. And I know there were some folks, I don't want to get political here. I really don't. But there were Penn State wrestlers that were at the Trump rally. That's caused a mini firestorm. But anyways, speaking of the wrestlers, the wrestling season is getting underway this weekend. And did want to mention that on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox here, we will have live coverage of the NWCA All-Star Wrestling Classic at Rec Hall here Saturday night. The action will get underway at 7 o'clock. Our coverage, I'll be providing the call, will begin at 6:45. There will be 10 men's bouts, 5 women's bouts, really good action. Wrestlers all over the country coming in, and of course, 5 Penn State wrestlers will be highlighted in the event. Bo Bartlett at 141 pounds, Shane Van Ness at 149. It'll be Tyler Kasak at 157, Levi Haynes at 174, and Carter Storace at 184. I think the two most anticipated bouts are probably at 141, where Bo Bartlett will face Jesse Mendez of Ohio State in a rematch of last year's NCAA Finals, won by Mendez on a terrific counter to a Bo Bartlett, what would have been a winning shot by the Nittany Lion. And then at 184, Carter Storace is beginning his quest for an unprecedented 5th NCAA title individually, but he moves up a weight class to 184, where he will face to open the season none other than last year's national champion at 184, Parker Kekizen of Northern Iowa. So should be a lot of fun. And yeah, just wanted to get the plug in there for our coverage. The NWCA All-Star Wrestling Classic Saturday night gets underway at 6:45 with our coverage on Sports Radio 98.7 The Fox, and of course online at 987thefox.com. That's 987thefox.com.
You know, that's fantastic. I'm glad you brought that up. I'm obviously not the wrestling aficionado that you are, Jeff, but these when Penn Staters wrestle, it's an event. It's not just, oh, it's, you know, if you're really hardcore wrestling fan. It's an event. If you're a fan of any sports, you will love Penn State wrestling. And I'm not saying that just for the present company. This is incredible, the dynasty they have. I'm not sure we talk about it enough. That's why I'm glad, you know, to have you on, Jeff, to set us straight. And I hope you don't mind me saying this. You and I did an event with the incoming freshman wrestlers a couple months ago. And you made a point of saying, you know what, Jim, despite this dynasty they've had over the last 10 years, this is the best wrestling recruiting class they've ever had, which just boggles my mind, Jeff.
Yeah, I've been talking with several folks in the lead up to the season, and it really is incredible. When you think about a program that has won 11 of the last 13 national championships, and I think it's not like I'm alone on this. I think most people will tell you that as good as this run has been, this stretch, maybe starting kind of last year and probably looking through the next 4 or 5 years, has a chance to be the best run yet, the best group of years for Penn State wrestling yet, which obviously is saying something. You're talking about a team last year that set the scoring record, that set the scoring margin, widest scoring margin by 100 points, all of those things. And I really think this year's team has a good chance, if it stays healthy, to surpass the accomplishments of last year's team, at least in terms, I don't know about the margin of victory, but at least in terms of the total points scored at the tournament. And there's just no signs of this thing slowing down for Penn State either, Jim. Not only do I think the class, that this year's freshman class, is certainly on the short list of greatest classes in the history of the sport, they already have probably, in the minds of many, the top two recruits next year now signed up. PJ Duke will be part of that class of 2025. And earlier this week, Marcus Blaze, the three-time champion from Ohio, who's going for his fourth title, committed to Penn State. So it really is crazy when you look at the talent that's in that room and now the talent that is lining up to come in and join them next year. I really don't think we've ever seen anything quite like this. I in college wrestling, and I'm not sure we've ever seen anything quite like this in college athletics before.
And the amazing thing is this is happening with so much change happening in the world of college sports with the portal, with NIL, to still maintain. It's almost like a different sport now as far as bringing in talent. Absolutely incredible, Jeff. All right, let's jump back to football. We didn't need to give ourselves a lot of time to preview Penn State versus Purdue. No other way to put it. Purdue is just a bad team. So it kind of leads to the question, what are you looking for from Penn State? Obviously, you're looking for them to win, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say, I'm going to guarantee the win this week against Purdue, Jeff. But what is it you want to see from the Nittany Lions?
Well, I think there's a couple of things that are probably the points of emphasis in practice this week. And really, throughout this final three-game stretch for Penn State, I really do think that the focus has to be on them and doing things the best they can do. And doing it with the idea, not so much about winning these games, but becoming the very best player and the very best team you can. Meaning, if you have an assignment, carry it out. If run the right route, make the right read, make the catch if the ball gets to your hands. make the block, make the tackle. Yep, there's mismatches here all over the place. Take advantage of them and then get off the field. Get those starters off the field as early as you can. Continue to build that depth that we've talked about. Give those guys an opportunity to get a little more playing experience, a little more comfort level with what they're doing when they're out there. You know, you'd really like to see Penn State have this thing completely out of hand by the end of that first drive in the second half so that you can just clear the benches the rest of the way. And I think, therefore, you keep yourself healthy, keep yourself fresh for what I think is really, in my mind, the last real concern on the schedule. And your concern may vary, but I think that the trip to Minnesota is the last, in my mind, stumbling block of any kind potentially that could keep Penn State out of the playoffs. Certainly, again, you have to take care of business, come out and not take anything for granted if you're this team. I don't think they'll do that against Purdue or Maryland, and I don't think they'll do it against Minnesota. But Minnesota's the only team of those three that I can see mounting a challenge serious enough that, you know, if Penn State doesn't go out and take care of business, it could result in a problem.
And you mentioned essentially playing a clean game, and I think part of that, which you didn't mention, but I'm sure you meant penalties too, those ridiculous ones, the offsides ones, the unsportsmanlike conduct. Play clean. Do not have those issues. Now, I think also with a playoff scenario where teams could end up playing 14, 15, 16 games in a season, preserving that health is critical. Speaking of health, though, Nick Singleton, we're told by James Franklin, you know, he's ready to go for this game. How much do you want to see Nick Singleton in this one?
I honestly, I don't want to see any of the starters a whole lot. So, you know, but listen, if he is healthy and ready to go, yeah, get him out there, get him some touches, get him comfortable with, again, the increased role that he's had. Now, if he's not 100%, don't put him out there, or certainly limit anyway his availability. But yeah, I mean, if he's cleared by the doctors and he's telling you he's ready to go, yeah, let him go out and play and contribute. But, you know, certainly you're at the stage of the year where you don't want something that is minor to become something that is not so minor. And again, that's something that doctors, coaches, and Nick himself are going to have to figure out.
All right, in the half minute we have left, we need your prediction and your bold prediction.
Yeah, I think prediction is Penn State wins this thing very comfortably. I do think they kind of call off the cavalry here in the second half because the game will be well in hand. I actually think it's going to be identical score to the Ohio State score last week. I have it 45-0 Penn State.
All right. How about a bold prediction?
I'll go ahead and go. I went 200 yards rushing last week. I'll say Penn State against Purdue goes over 350 rushing in this game.
Wow, that is bold, my friend. All right, that's it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.